Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to continue our examination of the role of the Reinhard Gehlen and ABN milieu in recent American foreign policy and covert operations. In previous segments, we have been taking a look at the role of residual fascist elements in American foreign policy and in the development and operations of the U.S. national security establishment. Over the years, I've focused very heavily on the political and national security milieu surrounding the Reinhard Gehlen spy organization. Reinhard Gehlen was Hitler's chief of intelligence for the Eastern Front in World War II. At the end of World War II, he and his organization, Fremde Heere Ost, or Foreign Armies East, jumped to the U.S. intelligence apparatus, where they became, for all intents and purposes, the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, the sole purveyors of intelligence on that part of the world. They then became the de facto NATO intelligence organization, and ultimately, in the mid-50s, became the BND, the German Intelligence Service, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, and organization has evolved right through to the present, and it is still the BND, and sadly, it has retained all of its fascist and Nazi character from the World War II period. Another organization overlapping heavily with the Reinhard Gehlen organization is the ABN, or the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. The ABN is essentially a renaming and reconstitution, a renamed and reconstituted Committee of Subjugated Nations. This was a consortium of Central and Eastern European fascist organizations that was put together by Adolf Hitler in 1943, composed of fascist organizations from some of the European satellite states of Nazi Germany, such as Slovakia, Croatia, Bulgaria, Hungary, Romania, and also some of the various countries grew out of the former Soviet Union. Of course, they were not countries at that time. They were Soviet republics, but Baltic and Ukrainian fascist elements were also incorporated into the Committee of Subjugated Nations, later renamed, in effect, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. The ABN, or Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, evolved into one of the key elements of what eventually became the World Anti-Communist League, essentially a reconstitution of what had been the Hitler-Goebbels anti-Comintern of the 1930s and 1940s. We've been looking at the role of some of these Eastern and Central European fascists in U.S. power politics and covert operations in the Cold War period. In particular, we took a look at their incorporation into the Republican Party and its ethnic outreach section, and the role of prominent post-World War II American politicians such as William Casey, Richard Nixon, Alan Dulles, Ronald Reagan with this particular milieu. What we're going to look at now is a continuation of our examination of some elements of this Gehlen-ABN milieu in American power politics and American covert operations in the post-World War II period. We're going to be taking a look in particular at the involvement of some of these elements in the shooting of Pope John Paul II, or in the investigation into the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981. My personal opinion is that they were the elements involved in shooting the Pope. And I think the evidence points very strongly in that direction. Listeners should be aware that one of my finest pieces of work, or what I consider to be one of my finest pieces of work, the archive documentary shows Radio Free America programs 17 through 21 constitute, I believe, the best work ever done on the shooting of Pope John Paul II, beyond the myth of the Bulgarian thesis, the now discredited Bulgarian thesis. The shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981 has never really been effectively dealt with. I strongly encourage listeners to this program to contact Archives on Audio, a tape duplication service that I will tell you more about later in the program, for the details concerning Radio Free America programs 17 through 21, archive documentaries about the shooting of Pope John Paul II. This segment is going to be heavily overlapped with the, significantly overlapped would be a better word, with the previous segment, and we're going to be relying in this segment on the research and translations done by Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who has been sharing his characteristically excellent work with us in characteristically selfless fashion. The segment I'm about to read was read into the record in the last segment. I'm going to read it again quickly and then analyze it, and make some references from this particular article to some of the material contained in Radio Free America programs 20 and 21, two of the aforementioned documentary programs about the shooting of Pope John Paul II. The following article was researched for us and translated for us by Dave White. It comes from the Corriere della Sera of Wednesday, August 23rd of 1995. It reads, "Sometime in the next few weeks, Adele Rondo, R-A-N-D-O, and Rosario Priori, P-R-I-O-R-E, the magistrates investigating the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi and the attack on the Pope, will be in the United States to obtain an interview with Monsignor Paul Marcinkus, the president of IOR, from 71 to 89. Orlandi is the daughter of a Vatican employee who vanished in June of 1983. The judges will most likely ask the prelate whether he was acquainted in the past with the businessman Francesco Pazienza. According to Pazienza's former right-hand man, Alvaro Giardilli, G-I-A-R-D-I-L-I, there were, in fact, numerous telephone conversations between Pazienza and Marcinkus, during which the Monsignor asked the businessman several times to follow the Aja case closely. Furthermore, Pazienza's name was brought up again by Aja on July 26th, when the Turk was transferred from Montecuto prison in Ancona to Rome for yet another interrogation by the two magistrates. By the way, of course, Mehmet Ali Aja, the Turkish Nazi, the Turkish fascist member of the National Movement or National Action Party, who shot Pope John Paul II with the assistance of some of his cohorts, one of the many elements that makes the Bulgarian thesis rather ludicrous. Continuing, on that occasion, the papal attacker talked about the visitors he'd had in jail. He said even Pazienza came to see him, and that the businessman had asked him to, quote, come up with the Eastern Bloc trail as an excuse, unquote. In exchange, he would be extradited to South America, perhaps to face lesser drug charges, or even freed outright. Aja, who spent the last 14 years behind bars, could soon obtain semi-liberty. Many of these names are discussed in detail in the various Radio Free America shows that I have already alluded to, numbers 17 through 21. First of all, Francesco Pazienza, an intimate of the propaganda due milieu in Italy, and a longtime asset of not only Italian intelligence, but U.S. intelligence as well, is an individual who figures prominently in Radio Free America shows 20 and 21, as well as looming in the background of the other broadcasts as well. The P2 Lodge, or Propaganda Due Lodge, was a Masonic lodge in Italy that was headed up by a fellow named Licio Gelli, G-E-L-L-I. Gelli had been an Italian fascist, a supporter of Mussolini, had supported the Rump Salo Republic, the last-ditch attempt on the part of Mussolini's supporters to retain part of Italy for themselves under German stewardship. Also, Gelli had been an officer in the Waffen-SS. He set up the P2 or Propaganda Due Lodge, which in effect became something of a crypto-fascist government manipulating Italy and effectively controlling it during the post-war period and apparently still wielding tremendous influence. The P2 Lodge incorporated very powerful Italian business figures. It incorporated prominent Italian journalistic figures, very important Italian political figures, as well as intelligence and military people, and also, last but most assuredly not least, Italian mafiosi, Italian organized crime figures. Two of the Vatican financial advisors, Roberto Calvi and Michele Sindona, both of whom died under very strange circumstances, were members of the P2. The head of the Vatican Bank, the IOR, the Institute for Religious Works, was Archbishop Paul Marcinkus, a Lithuanian-American, and an individual who was the bodyguard for Pope John Paul II. In Radio Free America number 21, we looked at evidence. By the way, Radio Free America shows 17 through 21 were recorded in May of 1986. In program 17 through 21, we looked at Francesco Pazienza's curious role in meeting with Mehmet Ali Aja. According to Aja, it was Francesco Pazienza who was one of the bearers of information to him that if he implicated the Bulgarians, he would be appropriately rewarded. I have noted in the past that the Bulgarian thesis is essentially BS. Recall that during the 1980s, the KGB shot the Pope hypothesis was a major propaganda football. It was bruited about and was cited as proof that the Soviets were the demons incarnate that we were told they were. In fact, as the investigation into the shooting of the Pope unfolded, the Bulgarian thesis died a quiet death, but did not receive a lot of publicity in the United States. I would note, too, that there are a number of interesting indications that not only was the Bulgarian thesis set up artificially by Western intelligence in order to implicate the Pope, implicate the KGB, but it is altogether possible that the shooting of the Pope may have been intended as not only a provocation, intended to be used in a propagandistic sense to demonize the Soviets, but that the shooting may have been intended to break up a backdoor diplomatic rapprochement that was underway between the Pope and the Vatican. The Europeo magazine, I incorrectly have cited this in past broadcasts as Oggi magazine, operating from memory, but Europeo magazine's issue of August 17th, 1985, had a fascinating article which maintained that the Pope, a Polish nationalist, an individual who also had very, very interesting connections, but the Pope had apparently been engaged in a series of backdoor diplomatic negotiations with the Kremlin. Both sought to avoid, or to defuse, I should say, the growing crisis in Poland in the early 1980s. The Polish Union Solidarity had defied Polish authorities and eventually was the cause for the invocation of martial law. There was fear in 1981 that the Soviets would invade Poland. Obviously, the Soviets were sought to avoid that because this would place them in would have placed them in military conflict with the largest Warsaw Pact ally of theirs, and the Pope sought to avoid that as well, because obviously if the Soviets invaded Poland, that would lead to a great deal of shedding of Polish blood. The Vatican, or the Pope, I should say, and the Kremlin were also in agreement on the need for nuclear disarmament and for diplomatic recognition of the PLO. None of those things stood well with the Reagan White House. We have noted in the past that it was in this period that a former high-ranking CIA official named Theodore Shackley, one of the most important officials in the post-World War II CIA, went to Italy to work with people involved with the P2, including P2 member and Italian intelligencer Giuseppe Santovito, an individual, one of many people who crops up in connection with the Pope shooting, who died in prison before he could be effectively interrogated. Santovito and Theodore Shackley were working together at precisely the time that the Pope was achieving this diplomatic rapprochement. Some observers have suggested that perhaps Theodore Shackley and Santovito were involved with helping to arrange either the shooting of the Pope, or if not that, perhaps the Bulgarian thesis. I would note again that Mehmet Ali Aja, the individual who shot the Pope, was a member of the Grey Wolves, the youth wing of the National Action Party, a fascist and pan-Turkist party in Turkey, a NATO nation, I would note, that was founded by Alparslan Türkeş, an individual who sought the entry of Turkey into World War II on behalf of the Axis, also an individual who became a key Turkish NATO functionary in the post-World War II period. The National Action Party, or National Movement Party, had very strong alliances with U.S. intelligence in the post-World War II period. They served as anti-communist enforcers. They also had very close relations with German intelligence, and elements of the Grey Wolves and the National Action Party in what used to be West Germany were used as labor enforcers to keep the Turkish guest workers or Gastarbeiter in line in Germany. I've noted in the past that the succession of John Paul II himself raises interesting questions, because his predecessor, John Paul I, was apparently going to open up an investigation into the P2 and its relationship with the Vatican Bank under Marcinkus. There are many serious questions about the circumstances of John Paul I's death. I personally believe he was murdered, and that hypothesis is examined at great length in Radio Free America number 18, available from archives on audio. In addition to Paul Marcinkus, again a Lithuanian-American, The brouhaha surrounding the Vatican banking scandals embraces former P2 members, former because they died, Michele Sindona, an Italian mafiosi, and Roberto Calvi, the head of the Banco Ambrosiano, one of Italy's most prominent banks, which failed when bad loans that it made that were guaranteed by the Vatican Bank ultimately brought it down. Roberto Calvi was found hanging under Blackfriars Bridge in London, supposedly a suicide. Many people, myself included, believe he was murdered. And Michele Sindona himself, after being extradited to Italy, where he had been from the United States, where he had been imprisoned in connection with the failure of the Franklin National Bank, Michele Sindona also supposedly committed suicide while in an Italian jail cell. I personally think he was murdered as well. I refer interested listeners to Radio Free America program number 18 for the details concerning the late unfortunate Messieurs Calvi and Sindona. Michele Sindona said that the loans that were made by Banco Ambrosiano and guaranteed by the Vatican went to Panamanian shell companies and in turn were laundered to help support anti-communist activity in Latin America. By the way, Uruguay and Argentina were among the Latin American countries with very prominent P2 lodges, and in fact the Argentinian junta that waged war against Britain in the Falklands War had many key functionaries in the Argentinian branch of the P2, including Carlos Suarez Masson and Admiral Emilio Massera, and also José López Rega, a key Argentinian fascist, was also a member of the Argentinian branch of the P2. We have noted that even though many of the Italian intelligencers from the P2 milieu were aware of the back-channel diplomatic negotiations underway between the Vatican and the Kremlin, they developed the Bulgarian thesis implicating the Kremlin at an early stage. That thesis first formally proposed by Paul Henze, former CIA station chief in Turkey, in an Atlantic magazine article in 1983. Paul Henze and the CIA had worked very closely with the Grey Wolves and Mehmet Ali Agha. We have also noted among the Western intelligence connections to the milieu surrounding the shooting of the Pope that, again, Francesco Pazienza was widely suspected of being one of the individuals who met with Mehmet Ali Agha and perhaps offered him a deal, as this article implies. Again, the article I just read from the Corriere della Sera of August 23rd of 1995 has information that Agha himself claims that Pazienza offered him a deal, either freedom or extradition to Latin America to stand trial on a lesser drug charge if he would implicate the Bulgarians. Among the other interesting evidentiary tributaries leading in the direction of Western intelligence concerns a fellow named Horst Grillmeier. Horst Grillmeier is an arms dealer for the BND, German intelligence. The shipment of weapons from which Mehmet Ali Agha's pistol came was a shipment of East Bloc weapons that came into the West via Austria. Horst Grillmeier was the weapons dealer who brought it in, and yet it turns out that Horst Grillmeier was himself an operative of the BND, as a London Times article made very clear. The press coverage in the Western press, at least in the American press, made it appear that the fact that Agha's pistol came from a shipment of East Bloc weapons that was brought in to the West implicated the Bulgarians and their KGB superiors. In fact, it turns out that a BND operative, Grillmeier, had brought that shipment of weapons in. We have also noted in the past that the circumstances surrounding the demonization of Sergei Antonov, a Bulgarian official in Rome, also are quite strange. Mr. Antonov lived in an apartment building along with a fellow named Felix Andre Morlian, Father Morlian, or whatever the order of his first two names are, and obviously I'm operating from memory, was the head of a very reactionary Catholic organization called Prodeo. He also was an individual who was a longtime intimate of U.S. intelligence, going all the way back to the World War II days and the Office of Strategic Services. Father Morlian lived in the same apartment building as Sergei Antonov, and there are indications that it may have been the layout of Father Felix Andre Morlian's apartment that enabled Mehmet Ali Aja to describe an apartment very similar to Sergei Antonov's, although differing in certain small details, which correspond precisely to the detail, the differences between Father Morlian's apartment and Sergei Antonov's, which were very slight. The ability of Mehmet Ali Aja to describe this apartment was cited by exponents of the Bulgarian hypothesis as proof that Aja was telling the truth when he claims to have met with Sergei Antonov in his apartment, and there Aja claims he was commissioned there by the KGB and the Bulgarians to shoot the Pope. As it turned out, the description Aja gave of Antonov's apartment was basically accurate, but it was inaccurate in certain small details, and those inaccuracies, again, corresponded precisely to the small physical differences between Morlian's apartment and Antonov, suggesting the distinct possibility that Father Morlian, again, a longtime intimate of U.S. intelligence, may have been involved in coaching Mehmet Ali Aja. And note again that in Radio Free America number 21, these connections that I'm alluding to in a glancing fashion are set forth at great length. Another fascinating connection from the aforementioned Radio Free America number 21 concerns information developed by Uğur Mumcu, one of the top Turkish experts on terrorism, that the CIA and U.S. intelligence had an operative deeply placed inside of the National Movement Party or National Action Party at the time that Mehmet Ali Aja shot the Pope. Of course, again, the Grey Wolves are the youth wing of the National Action Party, or National Movement Party, as it is called, and it was revealed in an Arizona Republic article from 1982 that a fellow named Ruzi Nazar, named Nazarov, was significantly placed and had good contacts within the National Movement Party and with elements associated with the Grey Wolves at the very time that one member of that organization, apparently supported by others, shot Pope John Paul II. Aja himself claimed that he did not intend to kill the Pope. He says that if he'd intended to do that, quote, he would have fired all of his bullets. My own feeling is that the Pope shooting was intended not only as a possible provocation to demonize the Soviets, it was intended to break up the back-to-channel diplomatic negotiations that were going on between the Pope and the Vatican and the Kremlin, and also intended to perhaps serve as a warning to Pope John Paul II that he too could be disposed of as his predecessor apparently was. Again, there has never been a definite finding in the death of Pope John Paul I, but the circumstances are more than a little suspicious, and the suspicion in these quarters is that his impending investigation of the P2 and its relationship to the Vatican Bank necessitated his elimination. Ruzi Nazar, named Nazarov, had been an individual from one of the Turkic-speaking republics in what used to be the Soviet Union. He was drafted into the Red Army during World War II, was captured by the Germans, and then, like many people from those republics, defected to the Third Reich's military services during World War II because he ultimately sought the independence of his native republic from the Soviet Union. And like many people, many elements, I should say, many people too, obviously, Ruzi Nazar, nay Nazarov, saw the armies of the Third Reich as his eventual ticket and his people's ticket to independence, if not freedom. Political independence from the Soviet Union, I should say. Nazarov eventually became, under the name of Nazar, a member of an SS punishment battalion during the closing months of World War II, and he then became a key functionary with the aforementioned anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, simply a reworking and renaming of the Committee of Subjugated Nations put together by Adolf Hitler in 1943. In fact, Nazar was one of two representatives, along with Slava Stutsko, the widow of Yaroslav Stutsko, a Ukrainian fascist. The widow Stutsko and Ruzi Nazar were the delegates for the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at the 1985 Dallas, Texas World Anti-Communist League Congress. Congress or conference is held annually or was held annually. And the 1985 Dallas conference saw Mr. Nazar as one of the two representatives of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. That, again, is in Radio Free America program number 21, available from Archives on Audio. Another article about the Azhar-Patienza confrontation, also researched and translated for us by Dave White, comes from La Repubblica of Thursday, September 7th of 1995. This is on page 14. The article is entitled Azhar and Patienza Face to Face. The article reads in part, Papal attacker Mehmet Ali Azhar and businessman Francesco Patienza will face each other in court in Rome on Monday, September 11th. Judges Rosario Priori and Adele Rondo arranged the confrontation as part of their continuing probe into the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi, the daughter of a Vatican City employee. After the confrontation, the magistrates will set the date on which they will go to the United States to interrogate Monsignor Paul Marcinkus. Again, Mehmet Ali Azhar has dropped tantalizing hints in the past that the U.S. Embassy and quite possibly Italian intelligence involving intermediaries from the P2, such as the aforementioned Francesco Patienza, were the emissaries that led him to implicate the Bulgarians in the shooting of the Pope. I have alluded to a tape duplication service which has the archive shows on file. Listeners who find my brief run-through of some of these details confusing and or tantalizing would do well to contact Archives on Audio and get Radio Free America programs 17 through 21. Most of the information I've just related is contained in number 21. Archives on Audio can be contacted at P.O. Box 170023, Box 17-0023. That is in San Francisco, zip code 94117, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840, 415-346-1840. You can write or phone to the attention of Paul. Neither myself nor the station gets money out of this arrangement. There's also a 20-page catalog which lists all of the archive shows, has a synoptic description of each archive show, and cross-references the programs with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. The home base station on which I record, there at which I record these programs, KFJC-FM in the South San Francisco Bay Area, has its own page on the World Wide Web. All of the archive show descriptions are on KFJC's webpage, as is a suggested reading list and a references for other sources on other good source material on in this field of research. Those of you who have access to the World Wide Web can dial up the KFJC webpage as follows. All of the following are lowercase letters. http://www.cygnus.com/misc/kfjc/html. Once again, that's http://www.cygnus.com/misc/kfjc/.html. After KFJC, it's a .html. And against all of those are lowercase letters. That to enable you to dial up the KFJC webpage with all of the archive shows listed, described, and cross-referenced, as well as a reading list and a list of other sources. That concludes this particular segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.